good day, and welcome to another episode from MuseTech.net. My name is Joe Pisano, and I'm here along with my good friend Darren.
A very good day, Mr. Pisano.
Hey, good day to you. We got a couple things to talk about today, and we are going to finally wrap up our, looks like to be a three-part series about live mixing, and we're going to talk a little bit about monitor mix today, some of the things that we do on stage in a live sound setting that makes things sound better, that makes things look better, that makes things all around better for live music. Of course, as you know, I've done this a long time, and I've done this a lot myself. Monitor mixes are one of the most overlooked, I think, and critical components of any live type sound situation. We get you get a couple people up on stage with vocal mics. In a band situation, we have some guitarists, or you always have a drummer. In our situation, we have rows of trumpets, trombones, saxophones, and everyone wants to be able to hear everyone else. And you may not know this if you're not into this, but usually when the live sound situation, you have at least two mixes, if not more. You have what we call the house mix, and then you have the stage mix or the monitor mix. Mm. Very important to get both. Most people concentrate on the house mix, and if there's a poor monitor mix, it can actually make that perfect house mix sound terrible.
Dreadful.
And so today we're going to talk a little bit about monitors, what we do to deal with a monitor mix to make it sound better. Some tips, some tricks, some of the things we do for better or for worse on the stage that seem to work for us in our situation. Now, early on, I think it was in the 60s, which may not be earlier for some of you, but for Darren and I, that was, early 60s is pre-us. So we're going to talk a little bit.
Pre-me.
Early 60s, you know, 19,
okay, yeah,
you know,
that's
early okay. 60s. And, someone found out that if you turn a monitor speaker around, all of a sudden they could hear themselves better, right? And thus was the beginning of the birth of an entire industry known as monitor mixes. So tell us a little bit, Darren, about what we're going to look for. Like in our situation, just briefly, I'll talk a little bit about we use five mixes. Monitor mixes, and they're discrete mixes. We have two solo mics. Each one of those has a monitor mix. The drummer has a monitor mix. The pianist has a monitor mix. The trumpet section has a monitor mix. And in a sense, the guitarist and the bass player, they have a mix because they use their own amps in addition to a direct box on stage. So in a situation where we have a vocalist or, in our case, instrumental soloist, and we put a monitor in front of them, what are we going to look to do to make them be able to hear themselves? What are some of the things we need to be concerned about?
Well, big picture on monitors on stage, it starts with, and I think we mentioned this in an earlier podcast, it starts with a good acoustic blend on stage. Mm. If the director can hear everything, we're good. If it sounds good to the director and he's standing in front of the group, then everything else we can make it work.
Okay.
A good monitor mix starts with absolutely and utterly nothing.
Sure.
Put the speakers out there, put nothing in them, and then you start building. Now, we'll start off with what can't be heard by the other musicians. A drummer needs to lock into the bass player.
Sure.
Now, you can move the bass player's amp back a little bit. The bass player may want to have his amp near the drummer. The drummer and bass player may lock together acoustically themselves and not require anything.
And we hope that they lock together acoustically. Yes. We're going to be in big trouble with that.
But
in my humble opinion, the bass player is the most important in keeping everything together. Some people argue it's the drummer, but the bass player has the rhythm and the melodic line and the emotion and the passion of the music in them, and they're, in my opinion, the most important part in the jazz band for keeping things together.
What is it, on a sinking ship, it's the women in the rhythm section first?
And that's right. That's right.
But so you need to find what folks need to lock up together, what folks need to be tight, and what can't they hear. So obviously, if you're a soloist, what is that soloist looking to hear out of their wedge? Well, they're not going to be able to hear themselves. They're standing in front of a fairly loud band.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
So they're going to need a little bit of themselves back. But as you swing a little bit of themselves back into their mic, and we're glossing over things like using auxes on boards and split snakes and whatever else, assuming those things are in place, because that's a whole series of shows
Absolutely.
On live sound development. But assuming those things are in place, in a lot of house systems where, like in an educational sense, or you already have a lot of those tools are in place, or you've contracted sound in, all of that's in place. So,
and ladies and gentlemen, sometimes if your sound engineer doesn't know what they're doing, it's a good idea to go ahead and bring someone in to help out with some of these
things. It helps
immensely. Have a pro do it.
Bring a pro and spend the money.
And spend the money. And really, you know, you may find a local company that that's out there that's in the community that's been through your school district or whatever, and they may do it for not a whole lot, you may find out. You know, as part of that. You were talking about the vocalist wanting to hear their vocals. Mm-hmm. Boy, is that important. I can't tell you how much a vocalist, if they go to sing in front of the whole group, especially in a jazz situation, they can't hear themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You're done. They need to be able to hear themselves. So a lot of people overlook that. You can put too much in, and now we have a different situation.
We have feedback.
Right.
Now, the vocalist, you start off with a small amount. You bring it up until basically they can just begin to hear themselves. Now, what's interesting, too, is if you have an inexperienced vocalist, they're not going to know exactly what or how much they want to hear. Mm-hmm. If they're just standing there on stage without the band playing and they're saying, well, I can't hear myself, bring it up a little bit, and you bring it up and say, well, I can hear myself now. Then they get into the performance and suddenly they can't hear themselves. You have the exact same. It's one of those things you need to work with them while the band's practicing. And you need to teach them some hand signals.
Right. Have to check it.
Thumb up, thumb down, or whatever else. They have to be able to hear the monitor while the band is playing. And they also need to stay near the thing.
Right. And this talks about the importance. And this is overlooked tremendously by directors. Not myself, because I'm really attuned to this, but a lot of the people I see overlook the sheer importance of having a minimum of half hour. And we're talking minimum here. Mm-hmm. I mean, a good sound check is going to take a long time. But to do a sound check, with the group, you can have everything set up as we do. We go ahead, we set everything up. We kind of make sure everything's routed correctly. And if we didn't have a sound check, I can't imagine how it would sound. It would take you half of the concert to be able to get it somewhere where you need to get it. So the sound check shouldn't be looked over.
And we should say right here, the most important rule with working with live sound in that setting, if you're a person playing in a band, if you're a director, a conductor, whatever else, get the stage monitor mix right. Do not worry about the front of house. Don't worry about the main front PA system or how it's going to sound to the audience. You've got to get the monitors right first.
And now that's interesting advice. Now, some people would, obviously what people hear in the auditorium is the most important. But what you're suggesting now, and I'm certainly not disagreeing with it, is, let's get the monitor mix first, because it's mostly overlooked. Because the truth is, if you have a terrible monitor mix and you're relying on them, they're needed. It's a situation where they're needed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how perfect the house mix is, because the overall, the glue of the band, the cohesiveness, it's not going to be there. So it doesn't matter.
That's correct. And you're not going to know if you have a problem with a phenomenon called stage wash. Mm. And that's where you have a bunch of monitors and they are up entirely too loud and they're causing a wash of unintelligible audio to come from the stage that the front PA system has to overcome, and that means louder ambient levels out in the house that the main PA system has to overcome that, and suddenly the entire concert is 110 decibels.
Right.
You're not going to know that unless you've got the monitors right first. The band has to be comfortable. The soloist has to have levels. The drummers and bass players have to be locked down. The trumpets have to be able to hear the fronts. You have to have that together first. The band can't practice. The band can't be comfortable until they can all hear each other and they're comfortable on stage.
Right.
And once they start practicing, then if the conductor gets them going, I always maintain a good jazz band director shouldn't direct. He should prowl.
He should be walking back and forth, snapping
his fingers, going, yeah.
So that's what I'm doing all the time up there. I'm prowling. I knew
prowling.
It. That's right. Well,
and then once the monitor's mixing and the band's jumping on stage, feel free. Walk out, talk to the guy mixing sound out front. Tell him, I need a little more trumpets. That's sounding a little splatty, whatever. But get the monitors first, because you're not going to know if the band's not playing right. It's going to cause all kinds of problems out front.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Monitors can get you into trouble in a heck of a hurry.
And this is one thing where, I'm an advocate of, if you're using a sound guy, make sure you get to know that sound guy. Make sure they have time to come in early to a rehearsal of yours, especially if there's time, make the time, so that they can hear and you can go out into the audience and say, this is what I'm looking for. The trumpets aren't loud enough here, because people, especially sound engineers, we're talking about two different situations. We're obviously talking about a jazz ensemble situation here, but they're not used to hearing all the different timbres of multiple sections. Usually, a lot of the sound people are used to hearing drums, guitars, vocals. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of experience for that out there. But with an instrumental ensemble, there's different things. They may be putting the emphasis on what you would perceive as a director is the wrong section. And so it's important for them to get the time to hear them. And as you develop a relationship with your sound engineer, they're going to be educated in a sense as well. After a while, they're going to know what a good jazz mix is. Take some of the good CDs, some of the Doc Severinsen CDs that are more – I'm talking about the more more modern mixed jazz bands, because the older ones, they sound great, but the fidelity wasn't as great at the time. So you're dealing with different things. But even at those, you can use them. Give them these recordings and say, listen to this, so that you know this is a good mix
and
for a jazz ensemble.
We've talked in the past about microphones. Not a mic isn't a mic isn't a mic.
Mm.
Microphones are tools.
Right.
If you get your engineer, your band engineer in to listen to the guys, they may have suggestions.
Absolutely.
Certain types of mics may work better on your sax section than others. The way your soloists are coming forward, then maybe a different type of mic would work better. The person you work with who will be mixing your band, your ensemble, needs to know that ahead of time. They need to plan for it. There isn't just a generic stage plot they're going to come in with mic here, mic here, mic there. They need to come in. They need to hear you. They need to work with you. And be open to suggestions. If they say, you know what, you're bringing all your soloists in stage left. Is there a way you could route these guys around and we could split the mics up so maybe we could bring all the brass stage right and then all the winds – or all the the winds.
Right. Well, I know what
you
mean.
The reeds. Bring them all
the
stage right.
Some strings in.
But exactly.
Right.
I mean, their goal isn't to destroy how you play on stage. The goal is to make a great presentation out front. And they're going to be working with you. And when it all clicks,
it's going to be amazing.
They become a member of the band. You hear the stories of the fifth Beatle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get these people from the outside that become integral to the band.
And one thing you need to consider is if you have a large house, you have to have the sound system in there.
Mm.
You need it. You can't necessarily fill that entire house up acoustically. And so you have to have that sound reinforcement there. Now, smaller venues and monitor mixes, to get back to the original topic on here, are a little bit different, because sometimes in a real small venue, the monitor mixes, goes back to what you say, can completely overpower the house. And in a sense, sometimes in the smaller venues, you may not need much of a monitor mix, just a little bit in there, maybe for your vocalist, and the house is your main mix, because it's small enough that they can hear things.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be dealing with a lot of reflections that are out of time and dealing with some time sequences on there.
And a good vocalist is going to come out and listen to the room and listen to their voice in the room. And if you have a small room that's a very live-sounding room, they may not want to mess with a monitor at all.
At all, right,
you know.
With that, absolutely. One thing I was going to ask you about, it's been on my mind, I've been doing a little bit of reading.
This is dangerous. You know,
it's always difficult and dangerous when we read.
I smell smoke.
But I was reading that there's a controversy. I didn't know about this before, but a controversy about whether you use, for a vocalist in particular, whether you use compression on the monitor mix or not. And the thing I had read a pro and a con for that. Obviously, the pros is they're going to be able to hear when it gets loud or too soft, they're going to be able to hear themselves. The con with that was that the more compression you use, the less the vocalists are going to be able to use their mic technique for the house, because they can't tell the difference with that. What do you have any thoughts on that? Or?
I will give you two schools of thought. If you're running a PA system, you're probably going to have some limiting somewhere on what's feeding the monitor speaker. Now, that's limiting. That's just protection.
Sure.
That's not compression. If you're inserting compression on the mic that's being fed back into the monitor speaker, and you, if you're compressing it, and a compressor takes the audio level and smashes it down a little bit, and it narrows the difference between the highest peaks and the lowest valleys and whatever else. Two things. If you're compressing it, you're going to lower your gain before feedback level, which means that monitor speaker is going to feed back a lot quicker than it would. The other thing is, you will find you can disorient a singer because they're not hearing their dynamics at all. Now, conversely, out in the front of house, I'm always going to insert a comp on them. Now, it depends. I've worked with some singers that their mic technique and their voices require just a little bit of gentle riding. But generally speaking, for the front, for the PA system, and what I'm concerned about out front, yes, I'm going to compress them. But in the monitor, you know, And the thing is, a band's building up, they're going to be leaning more into their mic. They're going to be expecting more back from their monitor. If there's a compressor in line on that channel, then that's compromises. It compromises what they're doing. And if they're a professional vocalist, they're going to hear it.
Right.
They're going to say, what's going on with this?
Absolutely. Well, that's good advice from Darren, and that's good advice from us at MuseTech.net. And we, at some point, maybe down the road, we're going to have to continue this.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, that's going to be it for this particular series. So I guess that's the end of this broadcast. And I'm Joe Pisano.
I'm Darren Morton.
And we'll catch you next time.
Hey, Bill, we're talking.